Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
11.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
It's not 10. You see, you're on 10 here. Where can you go from there? Where? To 11, exactly.
11.
Midway. So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
A lot of discussion about the Cubs' new network as the details leak out and more information comes in. We heard from Mark Gannis on the Mully and Haw Show. We heard from Crane Kenny, an extended interview on the Mully and Haw Show with more information in that regard. Cliff Floyd talked baseball. We discussed the Bulls' offense and the emergence of Otto Porter as a multifaceted offensive weapon. They win the crazy Otto game. We'll see if there are more. And football talk with Ian Rappaport.
So this story comes from Missouri. Police say a stalker in Missouri tried to win over employees at the DMV, Office of Motor Vehicles, for months by having pizzas anonymously delivered to them. Timothy Howe, 34 years old, was more enthusiastic than most when it came to waiting at the driver's license and vehicle registration office in Troy. Howe would often come up with excuses to visit, including asking for duplicate titles and other vehicle registration-related papers, authorities said. Employees said Howe's vehicle was spotted driving through the parking lot at all times of the day. Police said Howe ordered pizzas anonymously for the entire staff until one employee asked him not to buy her pizzas anymore. He then allegedly said,
pizza?
I bought them for everyone in the office except for her. No. In November, the alleged stalker left a large amount of cash on the DMV countertop, saying to the staffer, go get yourself a manicure or a pedicure, according to deputies. The incident was reported to the Compliance Investigation Bureau. Howe was banned from frequenting the DMV office. That didn't stop him. He still creepily cruised around the parking lot. He has been arrested and booked on charge of stalking and harassment. Thankfully, I can tell the story because everybody's fine and nothing happens. Stalking's not that funny a thing, but when it's done like this, that's just weird.
And it wasn't a specific person there.
It was the whole of the DMV, except for that one lady that he didn't want to give pizza to. Really strange.
Yeah, but wanting to be in and around the DMV is, in and of itself, reason you know there's been some sort of psychotic break.
Don't stay around the DMV.
Right?
That's not your spot.
When we last left Dave Assman, he was trying to get his name on his Saskatchewan license plate to put on his truck. Well, their version of the DMV is called the SGI, or Saskatchewan Government Insurance, and they have denied his attempt. He pronounces it Assman, even though it's spelled Assman. And they said no, because even though it's your name, essentially, other people can find it offensive because they won't know necessarily what it means, and they've got to look out for the greater good here. Well, he's not happy. We know our guy, Dave Assman, wanted to put his name on there, and he's going to fight for it.
You're damn right he is.
They can't win this. You can't fight the government, City Hall in this case, or SGI. So what he has done is go bigger and better. He created an oversized decal that looks like a Saskatchewan license plate in the green on white. It says Saskatchewan, land of living skies underneath. It's got the motto,
of course,
the whole thing. And this decal covers his entire tailgate of the white Dodge Ram pickup truck. So instead of just a tiny little license plate, he's got his regular license plate, Saskatchewan 385 FPJ. But the entire tailgate of his truck is now emblazoned with Assman.
Attaboy, Assman.
Go get him.
Represent for all of the Assmans out there and the Assmen. Assmans, right? Well, how do we decide to pluralize the clan?
Who's Assmans?
Come get your Assmans.
Something strange is going on at the place where a kid can be a kid. Do you probably miss that with your children being of the 13, 15 range. Do you know the place where a kid can be a kid?
Chuck E. Cheese, right? Yeah, the ball pit.
Yes, or where a grown man can go to play Papa Shot.
I took my kid to Chuck E. Cheese once.
That was enough for you?
All he wanted to do was play Papa Shot. He's really good at it.
Also Papa Shot.
All he wanted to do was play Papa Shot. And it was, I kind of hoped he forgot about it.
There is a conspiracy theory going around about Chuck E. Cheese, and they have taken to Twitter to prove that it is a false conspiracy claim. They're defending itself from an internet conspiracy theory that alleges the company creates whole pizzas by Frankensteining together uneaten slices from other pizzas.
Oh, at least it's this and not like Comet Pizza, underneath.
This is much, much funnier than that.
Okay.
The theory was propagated online this week by a YouTube personality that I've never heard of. But in the video, he's alleging that the pizzas have come out with weird and mismatched edges, one half pepperoni, half plain cheese, and just like pushed together under a hot lamp so the cheese melts over the weird, not matching jigsaw puzzle pieces, and that then creates the one pizza. What's funny is that Chuck E. Cheese, who doesn't tweet much, came out, their last tweet before yesterday was February 9th. Just, you know, talking about stuff Chuck E. Cheese talks about. But now, starting February 13th, they've got pictures of their pizza. They've got videos of making a fresh whole pizza and chopping it up like a normal person chops up a pizza. And they're tweeting about pizza truths. They're retweeting employees who have shot down the conspiracy theory of them pushing together pizza pies, Frankensteining together a bunch of slices to make one pizza. And I say you this, Chuck E. Cheese is a place where a kid can be a kid.
I've never had their pizza. How is it?
Fine.
Okay.
I haven't been there since I'm, 8 years old or something, but I remember really enjoying the pizza. The animatronics were a little weird, but I think they've remade those some, and it's one of the best places for Papa Shot in the city. Thank you very much.
See, that was when Chuck E. Cheese was popular. When I was a kid and there were birthday parties, the pizza that to me is just, ubiquitous was Barnaby's.
Barnaby's.
Do you know Barnaby's?
No, I don't think I do.
I think there's still one in Northbrook, and I think there's one out by O'Hare. Barnaby's was a big dark place where there was a light up number at your table. It almost looked like a taxi meter, and people either got cheeseburgers or they got pizza or they got both. And it was a thin crust pizza.
Okay.
And the bottom had a, or has, I think it's still in business, has a like a cornflower crust.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, where it sort of slides around on there.
All right.
And that was, to me, that's the taste of youthful birthday parties.
It's quantity pizza.
I see Des Plaines, Northbrook, and Niles.
Oh, so there's Barnaby's still going.
Still a handful,
still
yeah.
Going. People get their pitchers of beer and their thin crust pizzas. Still good stuff.
I was always Team Discovery Zone growing up.
Oh, you know, DZ was awesome.
Yeah, DZ, where kids want to be.
Hell yes. That place was amazing. There were no safety regulations at all. You
and
just jump
every
around.
Every day, someone would pinch their finger in like the rolly slide.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every single. This was a jungle gym on steroids in a strip mall in Vernon Hills that you'd go to and just run around. There was like a giant like pyramid that you would climb up and then fall off into the ball pit, which I'm sure hadn't been cleaned in years. There are now safety regulations. Do they still exist?
That's the one thing that happens when you have a kid and you have to do first the Gymboree era. There's the Gymboree years, and then you graduate to like the My Gym years, and there's always ball pits.
Now it's just the trampoline places.
Sky High. So awesome.
Trampoline places? Just trampolines or like
trampolines on the ground, trampolines on the walls.
But is that what you play, like the dodgeball trampoline
yes,
stuff?
Yes, that's what I told you.
I'm in.
I'm
in.
Trampoline dodgeball, and they have dunking trampolines. They have basketball hoops set up, and they've got all of like the gymnastics practice falling chunks of foam
right
in the pit. So you bounce on the trampoline, you do whatever dunk you want, and then you hang for the rim as long as you want, or then you fall into the
slam ball. It's basically like slam ball.
None of this will exist by the time I have kids. They'll all just be on their phones Skyping into whatever online playtime thing they're going to have at 3 years old.
Let's go to Moorhead, Minnesota. I have been to Moorhead, Minnesota. It's right across the border from Fargo, the Fargo-Moorhead metro area. An abundance of turkeys has become a nuisance for Moorhead residents. And the city council is trying to figure out what to do about it. They've approved a plan now to relocate 75 wild turkeys to eastern South Dakota. Don't get me started here, but this is... Look, how about kill them and eat them?
I mean, you could.
That would be my
advice. Are they not ripe? Have they not grown?
The council had three basic options for the birds, according to the area wildlife manager for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. One, try to get people to stop feeding them. Two, allow a minimal hunting season. Or three, bait and trap them with a rocket net.
Which
one do you think they chose?
That one. No, rocket net.
Yep.
Rocket net.
They chose rocket net. A partnership with the South Dakota Game Fish and Parks was forged. The council approved it. They're going forward with rocket net because the relocation is going to benefit. It so happens South Dakota has a turkey restoration effort going on. So they want to restore their turkey population.
Of course.
Moorhead, Minnesota has too many turkeys, so they are going to use large nets deployed by rocket cannons to capture the turkeys.
Oh my God, I want to go shoot rocket nets at turkeys.
The plan will require a Minnesota DNR permit and a wild turkey management plan, which has to be developed by September 1st.
Oh, what can that cost?
City residents will have an opportunity to participate in the development of the plan. They do not yet know an estimated date of turkey relocation. But they are going to deploy the turkey rocket nets.
You want another way to spend cash? Make sure you move away from your wallets because you're going to get in there right now after I read this sentence. For $5,000, you can hunt Bigfoot with Jose Canseco. Former baseball superstar Jose Canseco made his name hitting home runs, but his latest project is a pitch to go Bigfoot hunting. The former MVP posted two tweets on Tuesday night offering to take a few lucky people on an expedition tracking the mythical beast and a real alien. The tweets read, and I quote, "Go on a Bigfoot and alien excursion with Jose Canseco. Contact Morgan Management at..." Can I read the phone number? Are we allowed to read the phone number? "Come spend the day with me and my alien buddies. I'll show you Bigfoot and a real alien." And he throws in a real alien in the next tweet. "Bigfoot hunting, that's not good enough? Come on through. I'll show you a real alien." 702-374-3735.
Okay.
That's the phone number you call. It's just $5,000. HuffPost responded to it, found out that the first trip has been booked, but I'm sure due to demand, they'll mount a second expedition.
That's the Midday Midway. We are going to get some information on the Cubs' new broadcast plan, how that affects streaming, what it all means with business expert Eric Fisher from Sports Business Journal. He does this for a living, and he can tell us what this means for your consumption of Cubs baseball. He's coming up next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hulu and YouTube, they pay NBC Sportsnet and they'll pay Marquee Sportsnet the same fee that the cable guys do. And it's just, it really what it addresses is the consumer who says, "I want to so-called cut the cord. I don't want to have a cable subscription. I can live without it because if I have my Amazon and my Apple TV, I don't need to have, you know, all the rest of it." It's just a different way of getting to them.
It's all going to change. It's all going to change very, very quickly. And if you're a Cub fan, you're going to have to start figuring some things out if you want to keep watching your team. This is the way of the world. Here to talk about that, the Cubs plans and more, is Eric Fisher of Sports Business Journal. He is on Twitter at Eric Fisher SBJ, and he joins Bernstein and McKnight now. Hello, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
Wonderful. So I guess the biggest question we've got right now as they're starting to form this marquee sports network is, will more Cubs fans be able to watch Cubs baseball, and how will that network jive with MLB's blackout restrictions and requirements that make you have to get different services and pay more if you want to watch Cubs baseball or any team in a market you're blacked out in?
Well, it
A lot is still yet too early to be determined, but the general thinking is that the Cubs and Sinclair, by sort of operating on their own, they're going to be able to get, particularly in some of these outer markets, Iowa, parts of Iowa, central Indiana and the like, that they're going to be get, because it's going to be a Cubs-specific network, that they're going to be able to get some distribution, particularly in these outer areas that perhaps Comcast couldn't when it was a multi-sport network.
So how is that folded into the MLB blackout rules? We were hearing from some people in Iowa, and I guess this has been an ongoing thing, that because Iowa doesn't have a team, they end up being told they actually have six teams they're not allowed to see because of overlapping boundaries considered quote-unquote local.
Well, the biggest issue in this blackout map is that you've got, as you correctly indicate, a number of areas that have been jointly claimed by multiple teams in some in some situations, as many as five or six teams, but they're actually not coming in with a linear product in that market to serve those local fans. And again, the thinking is if Sinclair and the Cubs are successful here with Marquee, then in some of these areas, they're actually going to come in with an actual product that could serve some of those areas.
What in your mind, Eric, is the most important thing for a network like Marquee Sports Network to position themselves for in the future? You know, they'll get the nuts and bolts set up. They'll get themselves onto cable networks and whatnot. But the way we watch baseball, sports in general, is changing so rapidly. What's the most important next piece?
Well, the first thing is to get it themselves broadly distributed. If you look at a lot of the other baseball-led team-led RSNs in recent time, going all the way back to the YES Network in 2002, but much more recently, Sportsnet LA with the Dodgers, the former CSN Houston with the Astros, they all had some real distribution carriage issues coming out of the gate, that they had a big number that they were asking for. There were a number of providers that were balking and were not going to take on this channel. And it's going to be a real interesting thing to see as to whether the Cubs and Sinclair can get around this and have a situation where they're ostensibly fully distributed in the Chicago area, if not some of these other outer areas that we've discussed, at launch time. And we just don't know yet. And those negotiations are going to happen over the next year. But it's going to be the first thing is that they've got to get themselves fully distributed, and then they can start really working on some of these other emerging areas.
We're speculating on what else it's going to be programmed on this, and the fact that Crane Kenny they're not branding it as Cubs this or Cubs that. It is Marquee Sportsnet that will allow them to diversify their programming portfolio. And when you add up 162 regular season games plus extended pregame and postgame, you're still left with 94% of a year's broadcast schedule to fill. Is this going to be partnering with an RSN that maybe Sinclair buys some of these available Fox stations and just gives them chunks of programming? Or is this going to be piecemeal deals with smaller collegiate conferences or coaches' shows or kinds of things?
I think it's going to be more the latter. I think it's going to be a piecemeal sort of thing. Certainly you can't expect to see any sort of top-tier NBA, NHL franchise to serve as a winner anchor like the YES Network has with the Nets, or then some of the Nesson has with the Bruins and so forth. You're just not going to see something of that kind of scale, but you can certainly expect to see some other smaller properties that may fold into this thing. But also there's going to be just a ton of Cubs stuff that they talk to the team folks and Crane Kenny and the like, and it's just the Cubs business is really year-round, that they think that you get into hot stove discussion, you get into Cubs convention coverage, you get into spring training previews and the like, that bridge from November to February is not quite so bad. And then you're starting to talk about spring training games and the like, that the hole in programming hole during the winter is perhaps not as big as it might have been in prior years.
Do you get the sense, Eric, that the Marquee Sports Network is going to get help from MLB as it pertains to their digital platforms, you know, apps and streaming services and whatnot? Like, MLB AM is huge with tons of programmers and arms everywhere. Do they get to list some of those programmers, or are they going to have to find their own digital strength?
No, they'll have all sort of the rights and resources that the other 29 teams have. They're basically just moving their local TV rights from the prior provider to this one that they're now creating, but their ability to interrelate with league resources really doesn't change. Now, what it'll be very interesting to see if they strike their own in-market streaming deal, and that perhaps maybe what you're getting at, mm-hmm. that the Comcast stations did a sort of bulk deal that covered multiple markets of the country beyond Chicago, including Chicago, but beyond it as well, where they were folded in for authenticated in-market streaming. The authenticated in-market streaming piece remains the preferred model for the league. It'll just now be on the Cubs and Sinclair to come back and strike their own deal along those lines independently. And we've got a situation where, you know, 27 of the 30 teams are still lined up to be back with that again for 2019.
I know you mentioned that that's their preferred model. Is that the best model, though, for how we're consuming live sports, this authenticated streaming?
Right now, for them, given how the economics works, certainly,
but
100%. I do think in this structure and what they've done here with Sinclair, there is an eye towards the future. And if you talk to Sinclair execs and Crane Kenny and the like, that they certainly foresee a situation where you could have a direct-to-consumer offering, some sort of ESPN Plus type of situation where you don't have to work through Comcast or DirecTV or what have you to get Marquee, that you could actually just buy it digitally straight. That day is not here now, but that day could come down the road. And again, the partnership, as it's been described to me, is flexible enough to contemplate that. We're just not there yet.
Why? What's holding them back?
Again, you've got a situation where the money is really, and the audience and everything is still from the linear product. That's okay. Where the vast majority of the eyeballs are, and that's where the money is made. That's where the subscriptions come from in a much greater number. That's where the advertising comes in a much greater number. Again, we're seeing this digital migration, but where the money is actually really made, start to finish, it's still through the lens of linear TV.
How big a business footprint is this going to be? As far as, like, literally, how are they going to have their own building with their own studios? And how many producers, how many reporters, how many anchors? I'm just wondering what the comp would be. Is this going to be the same size as the Big Ten Network, as Comcast or NBC Sports Chicago? You know, what sort of business size?
Oh yeah, this would be very much a comparable type of operation. Sinclair has got a real estate division, as I understand it. They're already scouting out potential locations in Chicago to have this thing be headquartered. They'll have their own full staff, and again, using things like the YES Network in New York and Nesson in Boston and so forth as comps, you're looking at a full-on staff of executives and producers and on-air talent and so forth that easily can get into triple digits. This will be a full-on thing,
and
no doubt.
I wonder about it because in Chicago, there's been a fairly small number of trusted directors. Like these people that sit in the truck, whether it's Jim Angio or Dave Turner, and the others, and it's because these have all been clustered within NBC Sports Chicago. There's going to be probably out of market people. I think. I mean, for some of these jobs to direct a baseball broadcast, you apprentice for a long time to get good at some of these things. I can't imagine it's a large pool of talent to find people good enough.
There'll certainly be a mixture. I mean, I would imagine some folks who have been working in a number of these capacities for NBC Sports Chicago will come over, but not all. And then you have a situation like the Cubs, the opportunity to start up a new network with one of Major League Baseball's premier franchises, that's certainly going to be an attractive opportunity for talented people around the country. So I imagine you're going to have a mix of this sort of thing as this thing develops.
What pitfall do they have to avoid here?
Two of them. The carriage thing that I discussed before, that if you get us to a situation where we get towards spring training of next year and you've got major distributors not wanting to carry this channel and they're only in X, 40, 50, whatever the number is, percent of the Chicago market, that's going to be a big problem. And that's going to really hamstring them coming out of the gate. Number two is the over-the-air piece. Right now, there is no plan for local over-the-air games. That the somebody who does not subscribe to this network and just has a digital antenna or something of that sort, the only way to be able to see the Cubs is when they're on something like Fox on a national broadcast. So and this is a market, like a lot of other markets, that are used to at least some sort of regular diet of seeing their local team on free over-the-air television. That's going away, and there could be some real PR optics issues over the next year as that realization really comes in. I think, you know, they're not hiding that fact, but I'm not sure that's necessarily been fully understood by everybody yet, that, you know, the 40, 50 games a year that people have been accustomed to seeing on free television, that's going away. And so they're going to have to navigate that as well.
Eric, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Sure, always a pleasure.
That is Eric Fisher of Sports Business Journal. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season for matchups with Minnesota and Ohio State. Purchase tickets now at nusports.com. I know there is a fun baseball story you want to get to involving a certain MLB player.
Oh, it's delicious.
Is no end of interesting, for better or for worse, and we are going to get to him. But first, let's talk some White Sox with Chuck Garfine. He's coming up next on Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
For now, I think, like you, I'll probably from time to time get a glimpse of something on Instagram, but unless there's a Twitter report from Wetbutt23, I'll probably just stay quiet on it. Took a great deal of self-control not to say the other one.
An exercise in self-control from Rick Hahn, the general manager of the Chicago White Sox. Yeah, the other one is Katy Perry's name and a
can't say that
body part.
Body. But Wetbutt 23 is always funny. Just saying it out loud, it's funny. Wetbutt 23.
It sounds like a play call or an audible. Right?
What is wet? I don't even know what you mean, Wetbutt. What does that even mean? Go stand over
there!
It
means he goes under center.
Go stand over there!
Right, something like that. Right, it means it's a hot day and you're not out of the shotgun. Wetbutt 23!
Oh, I don't want to run that again.
Black 57,
stop.
Razor!
God, right. Change your pants. This is too much.
Yeah, looking forward to having a conversation with Chuck Garfine about the White Sox in just a bit. And the feeling in White Sox camp is one of bland, generalized positivity and hope, but knowing that it could immediately be turbocharged with one phone call, with one text, with one decision, makes everything feel attenuated.
I think what's tough to determine is our mood about the White Sox and then the White Sox mood. Because we've talked about this a little bit in terms of what if they signed Manny Machado. They get Manny Machado, and that doesn't change the fact that Lucas Giolito has to have a bounce-back year. And forget bounce-back. I mean, you just call it a get-there year, you know? It doesn't change the fact that Carlos Rodon has to stay healthy and throw 180 innings. It doesn't change the fact that Yoan Moncada has to hit instead of doing the other thing, the not hitting. There are two moods available for you depending on who you are in White Sox camp, and you gotta kind of be there to understand the difference between one and the other.
This guy's there. Chuck Garfine is on Twitter at Chuck Garfine, NBC Sports Chicago Sox reporter, and he's with us now on Sports Radio 670. What's happening, Chuck?
Not much, guys. How are you?
Wonderful. Wonder if you can help me with something. Has Yolmer Sanchez acquired his new bump box? Or was the bump box that was going around on Twitter yesterday his old bump box waiting for the new one?
Wow, that's the first question.
Yes, we were pretty in tune on that one.
Okay, that's the same bump box as last year. Ah. Last year, Omar Narvaez had one and Yolmer had one. Now that Omar is in Seattle, there's only one bump box and it belongs to Yolmer Sanchez. So there's the breaking news, I think.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. Appreciate it. What is a neurofeedback program, and why was that so important for Lucas Giolito this offseason?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, Lucas Giolito has talked about the neurofeedback program that he was involved in this last offseason, and he's citing it as kind of a big thing for him as he tries to announce himself. What is it?
You know, he was talking about that with reporters today, and I was talking with someone else, so I did not get into the specifics of what he was referring to, but I think he was just trying to do everything that he can to turn his career around. I mean, this was a rough season for him, so he's tried to improve his physical core, and the line that he said today is like, you know, I'm sick of losing. And it's been a rough go for him, not only here and last season, but with the Nationals. And, you know, he was the number one prospect, and he had all that hype. And in a way, he's kind of been through the ringer. And I think he looked into this offseason as, like, I'm going to do everything I can to make myself right, to make this my career right. So if it's, you know, doing stuff, whatever kind of technology is out there, I think he went seeking it, and even like had some conversations with Alex Rodriguez. So I think that's where he's at right now. He wants to prove not only to baseball but to himself that he can be that pitcher that many people thought he could and should be when he got to, you know, reach the major leagues.
I remain very curious about how Yoan Moncada can approach not just this season but this spring training. If we know that as he is a marvelous judge of the strike zone and maybe even to a fault, that they want him to be a bit more aggressive and attack hittable pitches. How do you do that? What's the best way to practice? What's the best way for him to work on being the hitter everybody thinks he can be? Because if we're really looking at the difference between untapped value and possibility here, what can actually deliver, that guy is waiting to explode. I mean, that's a guy who, once he starts hitting the ball and he can clean up the concentration issues in the field, he can project to be a four-win player for you. How does he do it?
I think one is to acknowledge your strengths and your weaknesses and doing something about it, the weaknesses. And I think they gave him a lot of rope last year just because, you know, he had to rebuild. This is the start of his career. And they wanted to, like, for him to start figuring things out for himself to a point. And then it got to be, okay, well, you need to make some adjustments here because the league had made an adjustment on him. Because if you look at what happened in April of last year, I mean, he had a great OBP, a great slugging percentage. And then, you know, the league adjusted to him, and he just kept swinging at a lot of these bad pitches. And he needed to learn to lay off of it. He also just needs the at-bats. He needs the experience. So he, you know, went to the coaching staff at the end of the year and told them that he wanted to, you know, fix this and what could he do about it. And, you know, without getting into the intricacies of what he's working on, because I don't know for a fact exactly what he's doing, but I know he is trying to fix it. He's not here in camp yet, but he did show up here on his own in October. Was it November? November, to work with guys here. And so I'm optimistic on him. If he's a stock, I'm buying it. Where is he, you know, what's he going to do next year? I don't know. But when he makes contact, I mean, you saw what he would do. Doubles, triples, homers. And there are very few second basemen in the league who would have as many extra base hits as he does. He needs to cut down on his strikeouts, no doubt. You cannot survive in this game striking out 200 times. You get that down to 150 to start. And then I think, listen, I'm not making excuses up for the guy, but he had a lot of bad calls. And I think that might have gotten in his head and maybe affected his instincts that he knows what are strikes or believes what are strikes and what are balls. And I think the umpires may have messed with some of that. But, you know, it is a riddle. It is a mystery about what he'll do this season. I think he will improve, and I'm curious to see how it all unfolds.
Chuck, when we're told that Eloy Jimenez is going to have to work on his defense for about 2.5 weeks in AAA, what will be the things he actually works? Like, are there defensive questions about his game, or is this just going to be a 2.5 weeks where he comes up and everybody's fine with it and we move on?
Yeah, I mean, so to answer the defensive part of it, you know, that is clearly behind the offensive part of it. But is it something that, you know, should keep him in the minors? Is he going to learn something in 2 weeks, say, that's going to, like, okay, now he's ready? Probably not.
No.
You know, but he does have a good arm. His outfield instincts, I've been told, aren't, you know, superior, but certainly good enough to play Major League Baseball in the outfield, for sure. But then the whole thing about, you know, service time, you know, it's tough to answer that one because it hasn't been decided yet what he's going to do. Rick Hahn spoke here yesterday and, you know, did not close the door on him breaking camp on opening day. But if it is true that he starts in the minor leagues, then it's the same answer as, you know, what went with Chris Bryant and so many before him, that's just the way, that's the rules that there have been set forth in the White Sox. In that scenario, if it happens that way, we'll just be playing into that. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that's the wrong, that's a whole other conversation to say he should be here opening day because he's ready. He should have been on the team last year, but there's a business side to it. It's not just baseball. It's not just a sport. There's a business aspect to it, and if that's what this White Sox decide to do, then, you know, they've got the ability to do it.
You noticing anything different from Ricky Renteria, who's comfortable in his position? He seems as solid as Ricky Renteria can be in a managerial job, but every spring training, it's the manager at the beginning that gives you that indication of tone, of expectation, of what this one's going to be like.
The tone has changed a little bit, and the words are starting to change with Renteria because he's like, it's now time to start winning more. You know, I don't think he wanted to put the, you know, he always wanted to make his team prepared every day to win. But they, let's be honest, they were undermanned on most days, most nights the last couple of seasons because it was a rebuild, and that's what a rebuild, in essence, what happens in a rebuild. But, you know, he said yesterday, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but he basically said, look, it's in a way, it's go time. We have expectations, and it's time now to meet some of these expectations for a lot of these individual players. We want to take a step here in 2019. What kind of step that's going to be, I don't know, but the rope that a lot of these guys have had last year, the year before, they're not going to have as much of it. And one thing that he mentioned was we now have competition at spots. You know, there were guys who were very secure in their jobs and their positions out there in the outfield or the infield because there was no one behind them. Now there are guys behind them. And if they don't produce, there's someone in AAA or even AA who's going to be knocking on the door. So I think that's what I've seen is different in terms of the words and the tone, that this team is getting closer to winning and having expectations to win.
Chuck, appreciate it as always. Enjoy all of the Nick Madrigal batting practice you can while you're down there.
Oh, it's fun. I like it.
See you, Chuck.
Chuck Garfine of NBC Sports Chicago. We are going to bring back the Mully and Haw conversation with Cubs business president Crane Kenny. He was on earlier today. We're going to hear it again. You may have missed it earlier on. Now is your chance, and then we will react to it right here. That's what we do on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.